All right, everyone, welcome back to a special DMZ. Bill, Cher, and I, we did our predictions last week, thinking it would be the last time we talked before the election. And then things have changed, including this shock and Selzer Iowa poll showing Kamala Harris up by, I think, what, 3 points in Iowa. So we thought we would have an emergency podcast, YouTube conversation. Bill, how you feeling? Are you ready to make some revisions?
I am ready to revise. I think I've done this before. I'm probably not the first time that I get a shot of excess optimism before election day, and I revise my prediction upward in favor of Democrats. So feel free to discount, you know, my tendencies. But I at least want to at least give you a window into my thinking here.
Yeah.
So Selzer poll. Should not be treated as end all be all. No pollster is perfect. You know, Selzer is definitely better than most. Excellent track record, but there are misses. Any pollster can have a miss. And she's going to miss, you know, Harris winning by 3 in Iowa would be a good candidate for a miss. So I'm not arguing that's on the nose. I'm not flipping Iowa blue in my map. What I think is really interesting about the poll and the result, and we've discussed this in past shows. It's been talked about a lot by Nate Cohn at the New York Times, that there's this big shift in pollster methodology where they are more likely now to use the 2020 vote. Who did you vote for in 2020 as a data point to wait upon? And so Nate Cohn was arguing that that's sort of controversial, and the New York Times is not doing that. It artificially kind of freezes the electorate from where it was four years ago.
Is this tied to poll herding, where people are afraid to be outliers, so they make adjustments to try to like be plausible? So, for example, if Ann Selzer wanted to, she could have said, "Well, nobody's going to believe Kamala's up. Let's just say they're tied. That'll be enough." You know,
so that's sort of more classic. That's more classic herding, where you're just simply fudging your numbers so you don't look like an outlier. I saw Nate Silver on X call pass vote recall as a form of herding, which I think is a real stretch of how people generally use the term. This is more like I would call a groupthink, that there's sort of a collective. I mean, this is all an attempt, a sincere attempt to try to avoid missing Trump voters, which the polling industry believes they failed to do in 2016 and 2020. So what can we do to make sure we aren't missing them? Well, tell me if you're a Trump voter, and if my sample is light on Trump voters, I'll turn the dial and add more so it looks more like the 2020 electorate. And now on top of that, and I've not seen commentary about this to date, and this has not been treated as all that controversial, is an increased use of party affiliation as a data point to weigh. I mean, there's a Pew article, Pew Research Center, they poll. They had an article back in 2012 arguing against the use of party affiliation for similar reasons. You're artificially freezing your electorate. You're assuming it's not just who you register when you go to the city clerk's office. Like, you might register as a Republican 10 years ago, but kind of changed your mind since because you're mad at George Bush about something, but didn't bother going down to the polling place to change your registration. So when the pollster asks you, say, "Oh, I'm a Democrat now," or "I'm an independent now." So if you're using party affiliation, self-reported party affiliation, at a data point, you're making an assumption about the electorate's composition, and you might miss a change in sentiment because people's opinions change. So right. Pew argued.
So it sounds to me like, Bill, in order to prevent making the same mistake that pollsters have made the last two cycles, which is undercounting Trump votes, they are trying to fix that. But what that means is that they're also fighting the last war. They're assuming that so they could be missing the fact that the electorate has changed and the entire paradigm has shifted. And Selzer does not get caught up in this problem because she is just, her weighting has to do, I think, with demographics. Like, historically, we expect X number of women to vote or women of a certain age. Mm-hmm. She's not getting into the turning the dials, as it were.
it's pretty light on the weighting. You know, it was age, gender, race, and congressional district. Like, she didn't even do education, which a lot of folks shifted towards after 2016 because there was such an education divide with Trump. So she doesn't even wait on education. But you could argue she's doing congressional districts. So in Iowa, you've got urban districts and rural districts. You're going to get, you in theory, you'll get the right mix of people through that. But she did an interview with The Bulwark, Tim Miller, over the weekend and said, you know, the whole point of this is to look forward, not backward. I don't want to look at 2020. I want to see where things are going. Oh, the other thing that Seltzer does, you know, lots of folks do likely voter screens, but how you screen can change pollster to pollster. Hers is very straightforward. Are you likely to vote in 2024? Like, she's asked the voter directly, yes or no. That gets you into your likely voter pool. So, and just to go back to the Pew thing for a minute, just to, you know, when Pew wrote this in 2012, they said, you know, don't do this. They actually put an update on that article saying, hey, now I think we should do it. Like, so like almost everybody does that now. Seltzer doesn't. So you could argue Seltzer's wrong. She's doing the mistake that other people made, and she'll be missing Trump voters huge. And that's why this is off. The argument to that is she in 2016 was the one who had Trump plus 7. You know, Iowa went Obama in 2012. So when that one came in plus 7, people were like, whoa, what's going on here? Seltzer have a big whiff.
She's got a great track record and gutsy, as we said. Super, super gutsy. Here's one thing too, Bill. Iowa has this thing where they have a 6-week abortion ban that went into effect this summer. And I'm wondering, and it seems like, according to Ann Seltzer, it is women of a certain age who are by far the biggest Kamala Harris boosters in her poll. I'm wondering if maybe we could this be happening elsewhere? I know Florida has a 6-week ban.
I mean, they have an abortion referendum on the ballot.
So, like, imagine this, dude. Florida has Puerto Rican voters and the 6-week abortion ban. Like, could something crazy happen in Florida?
I mean, I'm trying not to get overboard with this kind of analysis. You know, so I'm not presuming Iowa goes blue. I'm not presuming this means like blue wave across the entire country. I mean, it could. I'm not saying that's a ridiculous argument. I just don't have enough data to assert that very confidently. We have other Florida polls. We have other Texas polls. You know, Texas has a no exceptions 6-week abortion ban. And you know, and Kamala was just there calling attention to it in Texas. It could be, going back to Florida, it could be that having a referendum on the ballot does not boost Democratic vote. It gives pro-choice friendly Republicans to say, yeah, I can vote for Donald Trump and assuage my conscience because I'm going to vote for this pro-choice referendum and therefore I'm not a bad person.
It gives them an out.
Right, exactly. I don't want to over-interpret, but it is, to me, it's plausible. So I take the Seltzer poll as an indication that there's some break towards Harris, particularly in the Midwest. So maybe Iowa shouldn't be seen as a bellwether for the country, but could mean a bellwether for Wisconsin, which neighbors it. And there's also the New York Times set of polls that came out over the weekend, which were all the swing states, which had a slight lean towards Harris, but was tied up in Pennsylvania and Michigan, although it had Harris better than you might think in Georgia and North Carolina.
I think
overall, it said that late deciders were breaking towards Harris. So what were you going to say, Matt?
I'm sorry. I think, you know, I can imagine a scenario where we grind this out and it's ugly and somebody wins, you know, ekes out a victory. And then I think we're starting to imagine that, like, it could be that the pollsters have just made a whole bunch of assumptions playing it safe and that Harris could kind of run the table. Like, do you feel more optimistic today for Harris than you did 5 days ago? I think you do, right?
Yeah, I definitely feel more. So combine Seltzer poll, Times poll showing late deciders breaking towards Harris, which I grant is also just a poll. I could look at other polls that don't show movement towards Harris. There's other national polls that are staying fixed, like Emerson, for example. NBC poll didn't show movement. So I'm not saying it's a slam dunk case. But I do take those data points. on top of the fact that let's look at the last 96 hours. Who's on message and who isn't? And Harris is running, I think the joy came back. There was sort of a knock on Harris and she got too negative towards Trump. And like, where's the joy? You know, she's literally not even mentioning Trump on the stump over the weekend. She was saying very ebullient rallies, very much message disciplined. SNL sketch, not the funniest sketch in my opinion, but very much an on-message sketch. It definitely made you feel like this is someone who is a likable person you want to have a beer with kind of sketch. And Trump is just spiraling out. I mean, it is just darker and darker, weird asides, yeah. Making news in the wrong way. I don't care if the press gets shot. RFK can get fluoride out of the water. There's one other one that I'm missing right now as I speak off the cuff. But it's just not how any campaign professional would want to close. And you can argue it doesn't matter. Everyone's mind's made up. There are a lot of undecideds out there, but there's got to be a few. And so I'm thinking about how this is going to go compared to the totality of the polling, which is all dead heat. I see a lean towards Harris. I'll add one more thing. I was hesitant to give Harris North Carolina because even though my basic view was not it up, I'll give the edge to Harris based on GOTV because all evidence is Harris is better at GOTV and Trump's is a shambles, which I wrote about again at the Washington Monthly this morning. But I hadn't seen any poll with Harris ahead of North Carolina in a few days, so I'm not going to go that far. Now I have. Now there has been a couple. I mean, I'm not saying I don't think she's ahead of the average, but the Times had her up. I think there was one other one that had her up. Fox had her up with registered voters, but not likely voters.
So to me, this is like the Schrodinger's campaign thing right now. I mean, we're a day out. And I feel like right now there are two Americas, okay? One, and I mean that like both technocratically and morally. I mean, the moral aspect would be there's a scenario where Trump wins, and right or wrong, because he probably wouldn't win the popular vote, but right or wrong, to me, I think a little less of America, actually, if based on all the stuff you've just described about his closing argument, the American public elects him president again. And then I think there's a scenario where they reject Trump. And I feel better about America. I'm still going to love America either way. I'm a patriot, but I will be disappointed. And then I think, to the more technocratic point, there's two electorates. Like which of these electorates actually turn out? I think the general consensus has been making this assumption about the electorate that looks like most polls that it's really close. And it actually, maybe it's not. Maybe Kamala is about to win North Carolina. And if she wins North Carolina, she's going to win a hell of a lot more than North Carolina, which brings me, Bill Scheer, to the moment we've all been waiting for. Can you send me a screenshot of your 270 to win to post when I post this video on, but Bill, you and I both thought Harris would narrowly win the presidency by virtue of the blue wall, that she would, of the seven states that we're focused on, that she would win Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. That would give her a slim electoral college win. But now, what do you think?
So I'm going to give her North Carolina. That's my one change. Just the one change.
Oh, okay.
You're in North Carolina. Okay. That would make it a 286-252. So again, I'm trying not to go overboard.
So now you're not giving her Georgia. You're not giving her Arizona. You're not giving her Nevada.
I just don't have enough data there to predict it. I mean, I'm not saying it can't happen. She could overperform the polls in a way that could be a genuine blue wave and could even carry Colin Allred to the Senate for all I know. But without having the hard data there, I think it's too big a bridge for me to cross. So I'm not changing my Senate prediction.
51.
Just give me that one extra state. I just want to add the thing that Trump said was that I should have left. That was the other one. I mean, everything Trump has done. I mean, the argument that Trump pulls this out is that people care more about the economy than abortion, democracy, all that stuff. Pocketbook first, which I kind of agree with. I do feel like people put their own self-interest before everything else. And if the economy was genuinely bad, I would say this would be a Trump race. But I think the argument that the economy works in Trump's favor is not a clear-cut one. We see Harris doing better, not overtaking Trump in terms of who do you trust more in the economy, but closing that gap. And look, it's just not we don't have headlines about economic calamity in the close.
Yeah, and things like gas prices and interest rates. I mean, like, there's a lot of unemployment numbers. Like the only really bad thing, it's a huge problem, is inflation. But
that's come way down.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln.
I understand the argument that, you know, macroeconomic data doesn't mean anything. It's how you feel about things. I get that. I understand that most polls, people will still be negative about the economy than positive. But I think acuteness matters. I don't think we are suffering the kind of acute distress in the economy that makes it overshadow other concerns about Trump's temperament, about democracy, about abortion. This also goes for immigration. You know, Trump can beat the immigration drum all day long, but crossings are actually down. We don't have news stories in the close about communities overrun, about buildings being overtaken. You know, Trump talks about it, but like it's not buttressed with other news coverage. So what is the news in the close? It's Trump bringing concerns about democracy back to the fore by talking about how he shouldn't have left. So if you're genuinely undecided, gee, I'm really upset about this old inflation, but yeah. That January 6th really bugged me. What am I being reminded of in the close? It's January 6th.
I don't know if you saw this, but there was a Huffington Post report that Puerto Rican voter, Puerto Rican American, you know, citizens, well, Puerto Ricans who live in American states where they can vote. I don't know how to describe this, but yes, you get my point.
Yes.
That when they saw Trump in the trash truck doing that stunt, they didn't think of Joe Biden.
Right.
They thought of that comedian. So it really maybe has backfired and made Trump reinforce that gap. I want to ask you, Bill, because and I think this will probably go full circle with our conversation. But I guess at least I have two more questions for you. Our friend Henry Olson, who is a very sharp political observer, he was one of the few who was, you know, sort of cautioning in 2016, hey, Trump could actually win this election. He took a lot of mockery for saying that and turned out to be right. Henry Olson is predicting Trump will win the Electoral College and possibly even the popular vote. That concerns me because Henry is a serious analyst. Are you troubled by that?
Well, I respect him, and so I want to see the argument. So I was reading some of the part of the piece here. Excuse me. I found that Harris leads with Democrats by 89 points, while Trump leads with Republicans by 87 points. Harris leads amongst independents by a mere 2 points. Assuming Democrats or Republicans will have an equal share of the electorate and independents are their typical 30%, that means Harris wins the popular vote by a mere 1.3 points. I assume he's talking about this is his own average looking at national polls. This is likely an insufficient margin for Harris to win because of the way Trump's coalition punches above its weight in the Electoral College. His blue-collar, white-heavy voting bloc is a larger share of the vote in the all-important states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. That's why he could be Hillary Clinton winning all these three states, even as he lost the popular vote by 2.1 points. Trump nearly won the Electoral College again in 2020, even though he lost the popular vote by 4.45. There's good reason to think the state polls in Wisconsin underestimate Trump. Pollster Patrick Ruffini found the state had the largest polling errors in 2016 and 2020, both favoring Democrats by 3 points or more. He also found that as of September, the polls still seem to be overstating Harris by 2.6 points. Like, all of this analysis is based on how 2016 and 2020 went, so it negates all the stuff that we just talked about. Now, I'm not saying that because there's a theory that pollsters have overcorrected means that they have overcorrected. Maybe that is wrong. I just didn't see him really explore that in a deep way.
Bill, I think it's true that, ironically, Harris is doing better with white voters and Trump is doing better with minority voters than usual. And therefore, it is possible that the disparity between the popular vote and the swing state vote that weird thing that made that allowed Trump to win the Electoral College while losing the popular vote, that disparity may be declining.
Just look at the polls as they stand right now. I mean,
Henry maybe isn't grappling with that, or am I wrong?
I don't see him doing that here. Okay, it doesn't mean that I'm right and he's wrong. It just made me not all of a sudden rethink my analysis, because he wasn't really challenging it. He was just focusing on the way things went before. But we have evidence that, I mean, just polls as they exist, with the weighting as it is, the divergence between the national average and the swing state averages is not all that wide. And there's a certain theory that maybe Trump's doing better with African-American and Latino voters this time around, despite the recent garbage comments, although that I don't think is going to get captured in polling
recently. In these states, Pennsylvania, specifically Wisconsin and Michigan, do not have as large a minority populations as some other states. And so,
but there's a pretty decent Puerto Rican population in Pennsylvania. So when you're talking about states going to come down to a point, like, that could well make a difference. And it's also not zero in North Carolina or Wisconsin. But to the extent that Trump does do better than he has done with those populations, does that make them materially different in the swing states, where those are fairly white states, or does it just boost his national number, which might end up having the backwards effect of narrowing the divergence between the national polling and the Rust Belt swing state polling?
And that's because if Trump does a lot better with black voters, let's say he does a lot better with Hispanic voters, many of them are going to be in places like New York and California, where he's going to lose anyway. Right. So it doesn't really help him. Anyway, that's maybe too in the weeds. Let me ask you this, and forgive me if you've answered this already, but I didn't pick up on it. You've added North Carolina to Kamala's column. Why North Carolina instead of Georgia? Why North Carolina instead of Arizona? What is it about North Carolina?
Because I saw... I think North Carolina has been closer the whole time than Arizona and Georgia. And now I have two late polls where she's ahead, at least with registered voters, and one with likely voters. I think that the Times had her up in Georgia. I don't think anyone else has. I'm happy to double check, while we talk.
What happens if she wins North Carolina but loses Pennsylvania?
If that was the only flip, then Trump would win.
Trump wins, right?
Because, I mean, this is assuming Trump wins Nevada.
Yes.
Because Pennsylvania is 19 and North Carolina is 16. So you need Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Nebraska 2 to get to 270. If you're taking out Pennsylvania's 19, Harris would need to pick up two states of what was left on the table. And Iowa could be one of them. You get North Carolina and Iowa. That would be enough.
So Bill, I am not as brave as you. I'm not going to revise my picks.
Okay.
I'm going to stay with what I had, partly because I feel like I'm going to get blamed for if Trump wins, I'm going to get blamed for making bad picks anyway. And if Harris wins, I can claim victory that I made the right picks. Anyway,
just looking back at Georgia again.
There's no incentive for me to be a hero here, right?
Fair enough. Just looking back at Georgia again. So there's just the Times has her up, and Data for Progress has her up by one, but down in Morning Consult, down YouGov, down in Redfield and Whitland, down in Emerson. So not enough for me to want to flip that state. But again, this is all on a knife's edge stuff here. So I'm not saying you'd be a crazy person to make that optimistic prediction. That's just why I'm not going as far.
All right. Well, I'm glad we did this. What do you do on election day? Do you go to the movies? Do you relax? Do you follow the, cable news and exit polling, or do you avoid that? Like, what do you do?
I mean, I look on, social media like anybody else, even though I shouldn't, it's increasingly become obvious that everyone's post about lines at polls and midday turnout numbers, early exits. They've all led us astray so many times, so it's really not worth it. I vote on election day. I have not. I'm old school. I don't like voting early. My wife and I will go down. Often we do it midday. There's usually a bake sale at the polling place, which I like.
Nice.
It's kind of social. You know, if I was in a bigger city, it's not much. It wouldn't be a place for chit chat. But we're in a smaller community, so you tend to bump into people and catch up. So I like doing that. And there used to be parties election night here. 2016 was such a disaster. I actually emceed the 2016 party, and that was one of the worst experiences of our lives. 2020 was the pandemic, so there was nothing. I think no one has been willing to want to jinx things.
They're not optimistic.
So I'm probably just going to be home and just watching the returns and possibly writing something if we know how it turns out, fast enough.
Yeah, I think we know what what we've done today is lay out everything you could possibly know before 8 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday. And that is, there's like there's two scenarios. And like one of them is like that pollsters keep undercounting Trump voters and they've tried to fix that and either they have or they haven't. And then the other scenario is no, actually, the world has changed. The electorate's different. And by trying to fix the last problem, you're creating a new one. Live in the now. So those are the two options, I think. So I'm going to try to avoid getting involved in Twitter and cable news. I'll probably fail. Bill Scherr.
What are you going to do tomorrow?
I'm going to try to avoid getting involved in any Twitter fights or cable news. I'm going to try to take a nap if I can. It's unfortunate that this time change just happened.
That's the thing. I got to make sure I get enough sleep tonight so I can stay up late tomorrow.
I was up at 4:15 this morning, Bill, because of the damn time change. So, I was trying to go the other direction, right. Sleeping in, staying up. Anyway, I will be trying also not to drown my anxieties in gin. So, here's to that.
Have you decided your vote?
Well, I told you already, Bill.
You left the door open a little bit. So I was curious.
Lewis has been very clear about this from day one. If I lived in a swing state, which I guess now includes Iowa and North Carolina.
Matt. For all you know, you do.
Let me say something. If Kamala has a chance to win West Virginia, then she doesn't need me anyway. If I lived in anything resembling a swing state, I would vote for Harris. But because I live in West Virginia, I'm not going to do it to myself. I'm going to write in Ronald Reagan and be that guy. But I
realize
if you
realize you're writing in Ronald Reagan Jr.
Yeah, maybe I'll write in Larry Hogan. I don't know. He's going to lose too.
The man who ruined. I thought you had beef with Larry Hogan.
Well, yeah, Larry Hogan ruined the best night of my life, as we all know. I've told this story many times. Is it true? It's a true story.
Write Nikki Haley.
It was Larry Hogan Sr. who ruined the greatest night of my life. But thank you, everybody who's out there watching us. And please, go to Patreon, Matt Lewis, patreon.com/Bill Scherr, and support us. And we will be back. Ideally, we're going to try to do the day after the election to come back and do another DMZ.
Yeah.
And we'll see you then. Thanks, Bill.
And check out my piece of the Washington Monthly.
Absolutely. Check that out and stay tuned. I've got a piece, Bill, at The Hill that is going to argue if you are a small C conservative who wants a moderate outcome, you don't like radical leftism, you don't like radical rightism, the best scenario is to vote for Harris because you're going to get a Republican Senate to check her. Whereas if Trump wins, he's going to have unified government and it's Project 25 all the way down. So anyway, check that out. Should be out tomorrow, Election Day. See you, Bill.
Take care.